Iran may be working on a secret nuclear weapons program, some Western countries claim. We are making peaceful use of nuclear energy as a committed member of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, Iran insists. Since 20 years ago, Israel and the U.S. have been talking about an imminent Iranian nuclear weapon. This while the U.S. national intelligence estimates since 2007 do not give credence to the allegations American leaders are making against Tehran. I'm Homa Lezgi, and this is News Analysis.
After a 15-month gap, the talks between Iran and representatives from the P5+1, consisting of the U.S., Britain, Russia, China, France and Germany, resumed in Istanbul last April. Both sides describe the talks as positive, but as the two sides are gearing up for the next round of talks in Baghdad, some Western officials are making comments that threaten the progress made in the past. They say time is running out for the talks, that even before negotiations are concluded. Further threats of sanctions are also being made. Tehran hit back with a clear-cut response. Iran will not give in to pressure, nor will it give up its rights.
What we can discuss in Baghdad is cooperation based on inalienable rights of the Iranian people. I'd like to tell those who say time is running out for negotiation that time is instead running out for pressure. The pressures have yielded no results for them.
Recently, the U.S. and its Western allies have imposed tough financial and oil sanctions against Iran under the pretext that Tehran seeks military objectives through its nuclear program. Sanctions are nothing new for the Iranians. Since the Islamic Revolution in 1979, the West has imposed numerous rounds of economic, trade, scientific and military sanctions against Iran. But the real burden of the embargo is largely directed at ordinary Iranians. Tehran categorically rejects the West's allegations that its seeking to build nuclear weapons is baseless and politically motivated. Even the U.S. national intelligence estimates from 2007 have confirmed that Tehran is not seeking nukes. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has issued a religious decree, or fatwa, forbidding the production, stockpiling, and use of nuclear weapons. Tehran says its negotiations with the P5+1 aim to develop a comprehensive modality for dialogue, and the West needs to take tangible steps towards such a goal. But what's the actual intention of the West? Does it seek a successful conclusion from the upcoming Baghdad talks?
I think the fair question that needs to be asked is whether or not the governments of the UK and the US in particular really do want to see the talks reach a successful conclusion. We're not going to have a clear idea of what the actual intentions are of the P5+1 governments. I'm a bit skeptical about how my government and the British government are going to behave.
Well, joining me now live from Texas, political commentator Mark Dankoff. Thank you, Mark, for being with us. I'd also like to welcome our guest from London, security analyst Mr. Charles Shoebridge, and with us live from Beirut, professor of the University of Tehran, Mr. Mohammad Marandi. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question goes to our guest in Texas, Mark. First of all, let's look at a useful and an interesting timeline of Israeli and U.S. Misinformation about an imminent Iranian nuclear weapon beginning 20 years ago. In 1992, current Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu predicted Iran was 3 to 5 years from having a nuclear weapon. Again, in 1992, current Israeli President Shimon Peres predicted an Iranian nuclear warhead by 1999. And then again, in 1995, the New York Times quotes U.S. and Israeli officials saying that Iran would have the bomb by the year 2000. What do you make of these ongoing allegations?
Well, I think it's an illustration historically of what the Israelis are up to. It seems to me that you have a situation where Israel and its neoconservative allies and the American government and the American national security agencies are trying to make a case that there is some sort of an imminent threat from Iran when our own national intelligence estimate indicates that there isn't. This really mirrors what we did in the run-up to the war with Iraq and Saddam Hussein, when there were all kinds of false reports being circulated about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction, courtesy of Ahmad Chalabi and the Iraqi National Congress, only to later discover that all of these reports were fraudulent and that the United States invaded that country under false pretenses. The other thing that we might ask ourselves is this. Israel is not a signatory to the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. Israel is known to have somewhere between 200 and 300 nuclear warheads. Israel is in a situation where they have been conducting their own rogue nuclear program since at least the 1960s. And no one is asking the question as to why they are not coming under the inspection regimen of the International Atomic Energy Agency and all of the other relevant international agencies that are involved in this. I think it's transparent what's going on here, and it's a situation where we might ask ourselves whether the so-called militarized nuclear program of Iran is really the reason why Israel obviously wants a war with the Iranians, and whether or not there are, in fact, other reasons for wanting this military conflict to happen, just as I argue, as President Herbert Hoover argued, that FDR had other reasons for wanting to go to war with Japan.
Right. Well, that is an issue that I'm going to bring up again in the course of the program, whether this is the reason why some powers like Israel or the United States are speaking about war with Iran. But first of all, let's go to London, I guess. Mr. Shoebridge, Iran says it will never suspend uranium enrichment and it sees no reason why it should close its nuclear sites. So this is the red lines made clear by Iran here. So what kind of an agreement are you expecting from the Baghdad talks?
I've actually got quite an open mind as to what to expect. I can understand the position of cynics on both sides of the argument when one looks back at the history of these negotiations and the agreements that have come, or rather failed to come, from previous meetings. One can understand the scepticism that is there on both sides, and especially in respect of motivations on either side. Of course, on the one side, you have many Western observers feeling that Iran has been duplicitous, that has failed to comply with inspection requests in the past, in the recent past, in fact, and will make agreements and then go back on them. That is the perspective on one side, and on the other, as the previous speaker has said, that this is being used as an excuse, as a stick, if you like, to beat Iran up with, and I would add, as a stick to beat up moderate oppositions domestically in the political sort of arena of Israel and other Western powers. So those are the two sides. But we will see what happens. I mean, on past performance, even though recent meetings have been relatively convivial, if not productive, it may well be that some form of arrangement is agreed. But nonetheless, of course, the proof of it will be in the pudding, if you like. It won't be so much what's agreed at this meeting and what is announced publicly, because at the moment it seems that both sides are trying to come to some compromise on this and a positive outcome, but it'll be what's down the road in terms of implementation of what's agreed on both sides.
Right. Professor Marandi in Beirut, the mainstream media right now are talking of covert Iranian action to develop arms, saying that this is what actually these talks are about. This is what the IAEA chief's visit to Iran is about. How can Iran convince the West in these talks that it's not after nuclear weapons? How can it be, in their words, more transparent?
Well, the Iranians have been quite transparent. All of their nuclear installations, in accordance with the NPT, are under IAEA supervision. Contrary to what we often hear in the Western media, even the Fordow plant that is discussed so much by Western analysts, it is under full supervision. And 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, there are cameras there installed that monitor what's going on in the plant, and the permanent IAEA inspectors in Iran, who I think are based in the Natanz Center installation, they have access to Fordow at any time that they wish to go to. And therefore, Iran is abiding by the law. If Western countries want something more than the law in order to ease suspicions that they may have, and even that in the eyes of Iranians is questionable, whether they are truly suspicious or this is just intended to put pressure on Iran. If they want extra access, then they have to give something in return. For example, in the Lavalsan military installation, they've made claims with regards to that installation containing suspicious facilities. But they have done this in the past before, and twice they entered the very same Lavasan military installation and they found nothing. What the Iranians are saying that fine, if you want to enter Lavasan, the Lavasan military complex, you can. But if you don't find anything, then what? Is this going to be a never-ending story, or do we get something in return? In other words, the Iranians are saying that in order for this to be resolved, there has to be a comprehensive solution. And in order for a comprehensive solution to take place, Western countries must give something in return for Iranian help. Now, one final thing that I'd like to mention is that in the past, the Iranians have made many initial steps. They halted enrichment for 2 years. They applied the additional protocol for a couple of years. They signed the Tehran Declaration, which the West basically refused. Now is the time for the West to make the first move. So I think that in Baghdad, the Iranians will be waiting to see if the West is serious about resolving the issue or not.
Right, and that brings me to the next question. Mark Dankoff, if you could respond to this one. And that is the ball being now in the court of the Western side. Do you think now it's for the West to decide on how it should deal with the case when it comes to the Baghdad talks? As our guest, Mr. Marandi, was saying there, Iran has been giving its transparent, rather, responses that they've been asking for. Iran has itself been developing its, it says, peaceful nuclear technology. Does that mean that the West is now facing a situation that it has to come up with an idea to reach a compromise here?
I think it does, and I think it's important to emphasize that the United States and Israel and Britain, in my judgment, have already poisoned the waters leading up to these talks. After all, the fingerprints of the Israeli Mossad are all over these assassinations of these Iranian nuclear scientists, utilizing the MEK as their proxy in these killings. You have drone airspace violations of Iran's airspace. You have aircraft carrier deployments that are extremely threatening, that are continuing even as we speak here in regard to the Persian Gulf region. You have all of these economic sanctions that have targeted Iran's oil industry as well as its banking industry. And now we have a situation, of course, where the United States Congress has passed a military appropriations bill, which basically says that Iran has no right to a civilian enriched uranium program of any kind whatsoever. That's in clear conflict with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. That is a clear conflict with international law. And it simply dovetails with the statements that people like Joseph Lieberman, who is Netanyahu's best buddy in the United States Senate, have been making. The curious thing is that in recent days, the Israelis have slightly changed their tune on this.
Right.
They said they would not permit any form of Iranian enriched uranium program. Now Ehud Barak is saying that Israel will permit, quote unquote, Israel will permit Iran to enrich uranium up to something like 3.5%.
Right, well, Mr. Shoebridge in London, what Mark was just telling us there, in his words, poisoning the waters even before discussions are made. Of course, we've seen that the sanctions that have been imposed on Iran, the unilateral sanctions that have been imposed specifically from the part of the United States, people are saying even here in Iran that these sanctions are targeting ordinary Iranians. Why should the U.S. be targeting ordinary Iranian civilians? And now, as Mark was saying, that the U.S. Congress talking about banning Iran from even having civilian use of nuclear energy. So what do you think these sanctions tell about the intentions of the West regarding talks?
I think there's a danger that one can take all of these actions too literally. It may come to pass that, in fact, that was the right approach to take. But nonetheless, one needs to see all of these actions, all of these statements. And I would include, for example, the recent speech by the American envoy to Israel last week that basically stated that United States doesn't just have a plan to attack the sites that are relevant to the Iranian nuclear program, but that attack plan is actually ready to be launched. All of these if you like, are negotiation ploys. They are there to put pressure one way or the other on the Iranian government and the Iranian negotiations team. I think the Iranians see through that.
Just to jump in here, if I may, the question is, Iran has been saying its argument that the IAEA has not put forward any concrete evidence up until now that Iran is after nuclear weapons. We even have heard US and Israeli intelligence agencies announcing that they have also come to this conclusion that Iran does not have a nuclear weapon. So Iran right now is asking, is Iran's case being politicized? Is it being blown out of proportion?
Yes, and to some extent, Iran plays into the hands of those that seek to exploit political capital out of this situation. For example, we've now got a situation where the head of the IAEA has, in visiting Tehran and Iran generally, has come to the conclusion that now there is going to be a framework in place for inspections. That suggests very strongly, as indeed Mr. Amani's predecessor has said, that there wasn't complete and full compliance in the past. That was the implication, at least. That has now been put to rest in advance of these talks in Baghdad. So although Iran, on the one hand, plays hardball with the West, as indeed the West is doing with Iran, it can't therefore be any surprise that both of those positions play into the other's hands. It makes positions become entrenched. Indeed, just as we saw being said in your introductory piece, that where there's pressure, in fact, that has backfired. It also backfires the other way as well. When Iran plays this hardball position, and who can blame it for doing so, nonetheless, it does give strength and succor to its critics in the West.
And I'd like to put that point to Mr. Marandi in Beirut. Would you agree, Mr. Marandi, that Iran's, Mr. Shoubry's words, playing the hardball game as well? Is this going to mean that there will be no compromise, that there will be no agreement yet between the two sides?
Well, I'd like to point out a couple of things. One is that Mr. Amano, who came to Tehran today, didn't come to an agreement with Iran. And the reason is because Mr. Amano has been trying to block an agreement. The Iranians, during the talks with the IAEA, had gotten very close to a final agreement and in their negotiations, in previous negotiations a few weeks ago. And then Mr. Amano called his deputy, who was in Tehran, and said, demand to visit the Lavasan military complex. And the Iranians refused, and the talks failed to come to a conclusion, whereas it was already agreed beforehand that a request to see the Lavasan complex would not be made until a comprehensive framework had been agreed upon. And even now, the Iranian position is that, yes, you can visit any complex, such as the Lavasan military base, but within the framework of a comprehensive solution. Why? Because the Iranians say that every time we allow them to visit someplace, then a few months later they make new accusations. And in other words, it's become a never-ending process. Or, for example, the Iranians said that the IAEA should put forward questions and we will give the answers. Once those questions have been answered, then they must put that question aside. Mr. Amano is against this. He's saying, no, when we get to question number 3 or 4, we can then go back to question number 1. In other words, Mr. Amano, basically under American pressure, is trying to create a situation where there will be a never-ending process so that the Americans will have always the capability to put pressure on Iran. This is contrary to what Mr. Al-Baradei did when they did establish a comprehensive framework to resolve key issues, and key, very serious issues were resolved, and it was proven that Iran's position, in fact, was correct and that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons at that time. It was a very successful agreement that Dr. Larijani and Mr. Al-Baradei agreed upon at that time. But one final point that I'd like to make is that the pressure that the United States is trying to put on Iran, right, putting pressure in at a negotiating table is something that everyone does. But the United States, by threatening Iran with military action, is attempting to terrorize ordinary people. That's a crime. The United States, by trying to block trade, prevent Iran from importing and exporting, from shutting down the Iranian central bank and shutting down Iranian oil exports, are trying to make ordinary Iranians suffer. That is a crime. That is criminal. So Western countries are not playing hardball. They are playing with people's lives. And that's something that they've been doing in the past. During the Iran-Iraq war, they provided Saddam Hussein with chemical weapons, and they allowed him to slaughter Iranians, and they tried to prevent Iran from even importing gas masks. So this is something that we've seen for a very long time, and this is one reason why the Iranians play such a tough game, because they know that the United States and the West are not trustworthy, and we saw that in the Tehran Declaration. When the declaration was signed, it was signed within the framework of the letter that Obama sent to the Brazilian president and the Turkish prime minister. He said, if an agreement is signed within this framework, I'll accept it. The agreement was signed, and then Obama rejected it and effectively slapped the Turkish prime minister and the Turkish and the Brazilian president in the face and went for new sanctions. So the United States is neither trustworthy, and its actions towards Iran are criminal. Right. And that's why the Iranians have been very suspicious of the West.
Right, Mark Dankoff, right now we're hearing some observers concluding that if this round of talks also fails, this means that the military option is going to come forward. Do you think that that is the case and that the U.S. is going to be seriously considering that?
There are mixed signals on this. Certainly we're hearing very bellicose things out of all of the Israeli assets in the American national security establishment and the American government. There are others, however, who urge extreme caution with this, who are quite concerned that we are getting ourselves into something that we cannot control, that we cannot foresee all of the implications of. My fear is that even if the United States government comes to sanity and decides that a military preemptive strike on Iran is not in the cards and that it's not in anyone's interest, I'm concerned that Netanyahu may start this war on his own and then drag the United States into it in an American presidential year when Israel controls both the Democratic and Republican presidential candidates.
Thank you very much. Mark Dankoff, political commentator, joining us there live from Texas. I'm afraid we've run out of time. I'd also like to thank our guest in London, security analyst Mr. Charles Shoebridge, and with us from Beirut, professor of the University of Tehran, Mr. Mohammad Marandi. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us. I'm afraid we've run out of time for this edition of News Analysis from me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team here in Tehran. Until our next program, it's goodbye.